The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes.
This portion of the Hayes Advantage is brought to you by BMW of Greenwich. When looking for a BMW, you want the luxury experience you always dreamed of. BMW of Greenwich, right on Putnam Avenue, is the definition of luxury. Go to BMWofGreenwich.com to start your luxury experience today. And I want to get my David Katz experience going today. David, of course, is Chief Investment Officer at Matrix Asset Advisors. David, welcome back.
Hey, Kathleen.
So, you know, it's very funny. I got a comment from an email from a listener the other day saying, seems like whenever the market's down, you have bullish people on. When it's up, you have negative people on. I said, well, I wrote him back. It's very kind of random. We just try to get a variety of views. But David, you have been consistently had a fairly bullish view of the stock market, at least for the last year, wouldn't you say?
We've been upbeat about the market in terms of it, thinking that it's going to finish up 10 or 11 or 12% this year. As this bear market or this very significant market sell-off has come as quickly and as sharply as it has to the downside, we've gotten progressively more bullish. So, you know, as a result of the sell-off, we're actually very upbeat about stocks over the next 6 to 12 months, far more so than we were 3 or 4 months ago, just because the upside is that much greater.
In other words, because we've had the big pullback from where we are, you would say, you know, the fundamentals are still there and stocks are still going to make the kind of gains you would have guessed, but now you've got a chance to sort of jump in.
That's exactly right. Right now, the S&P 500 is selling at 11 times earnings, and if you look at bond rates at 0.5% and 2% on 10-year treasuries, we think stocks are a very good place to be. We think the entry point is very good, and we would not look at the poor returns over the last 10 years to tell you where it's going, but rather the poor returns over the last 10 years, we think, have set the stage for some very favorable returns coming forward.
And I'll tell you, David, I have heard this same argument from Bill Greiner from, you know, Scout Investment Advisors. He's got a very bullish view. He thinks we're in for a secular bull. Marianne Bartels thinks it's going to take a couple years, Chief Technical Analyst of BofA Merrill Lynch. But she, too, agrees we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. Just going to be flat for a while. But anyway, the point that has come back to me when I ask other people about this, we'll ask you. What about weak growth? Because this is what the skeptics say to your bullish view. The economy is just not strong enough to support that. And we're in a different kind of economy, right? And that's what's going to prevent this longer-term bullish view of the stock market from transpiring.
Well, you have two things going on. The macro issues are very negative and very concerning. Unemployment or the labor trends have been very slow, and the economy surely is in a weak patch right now. The other side of the coin, however, is corporate America, and corporate America is doing exceptionally well. Earnings have been coming through very nicely. Our sense is that earning growth is going to slow, and if we get into this slower growth trend, earnings growth are going to grow at, say, 5% to 10% rather than 15%. But if you look at stock markets over the last 50 or 70 years, a slow to mid-growth mode of earnings has generally been the sweet spot of stock market returns. And if you couple that with the fact that you're starting from such an inexpensive multiple and that interest rates are so low, we think stocks are a very, very good place to be.
Okay, the S&P 500 is at 1190. You know, it's been flirting around the 1200 support resistance level, depending on which direction stocks are going. What's your price target for the end of the year? We're getting awful close to the end of the year, aren't we?
Well, we still have a ways to go. We think this year is going to track very much like last year, which you had a very poor middle section of the year and then a robust end to the year. We still think that the stock market can end the year up 10 or 15%. So from these levels, you're talking about a 15 to 20% plus rally.
And I'm just doing the math. If we're at 1,200, if we had a 20% rally, we'd end up at around 1,400?
That sounds about right.
Oh, gosh, I could do it in my head. Dom, do you have a quick question for David?
I was going to say, as we look at these kind of technical patterns and everything else emerge here, one of the things fundamentally that a lot of investors have a real issue with right now is this growth versus income trade, right? A lot of stock investors want that income or that dividend payout. Do you see a trend amongst your clients or your investors here right now where they do want to own dividend-paying stocks, if any kind of stocks at all?
Well, clearly in the sell-off, income-paying stocks and the more stable companies have done a lot better. So we think that trend is there. You want to look as an investor in both areas of the market to make money.
Okay, Dave, we're going to let you expound more on that thought after we come back from a quick break. David Katz is going to look not just at the general direction of the market and the challenges it faced, but some individual companies, the ones he is owning and advising his clients to. And that's next on Bloomberg Radio. BMW.com to set the pace of your own BMW experience. David Katz is my guest, CEO of Matrix Asset Advisors. David is bullish on stocks. He said the S&P 500, which is trading now at 1191, could hit 1400 by the end of the year, could be a 15 to 20% gain. And we're talking broadly about what is driving it, what the obstacles are. And my colleague Dom Chu, our stocks editor, had just asked David a question about getting income on stocks, on the dividend payers. David, continue your argument, because I know you think this is a pretty interesting thing for investors to consider.
So just as the background, we like stocks a lot from here. I think that the broad basket goes up. But if you're a income investor, if you're a bond investor and you're looking right now at getting 0.9% on a 5-year bond or 2% on a 10-year bond, we think that you can look toward the stock market and look toward the higher dividend paying part of the stock market as a possible alternative, at least with some of the money. Because if you're buying some of those stocks now, we think you get a nice stable income stream. The income stream can go up over time, and we think 1 or 2 years down the road, the stocks will be modestly higher. So you can buy some really good blue chip names like Abbott Labs, Duke Energy, Heinz, Honeywell, Royal Dutch, Vodafone, get a yield of about 4%. Those dividends are going up over time. You have the short-term uncertainty, but if the economy gets better one day, and we're very comfortable the economy will get better one day, yields on bonds are actually going to go up, which means you can lose principal. If you're buying these stocks, you actually can get some appreciation plus the income.
A big picture question for you. Charles Plosser, exclusive interview here on Bloomberg Radio this morning on Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene, explained why he dissented on the Fed's decision to state that it's going to at least consider keeping its key rate at zero until the middle of 2013. It's contingent on the economy, but the market's kind of taken that as a pledge the rate will stay low. And number two, the Fed is signaling, in the view of many traders and investors, the possibility of another round of quantitative easing, QE3. Does that play into your view of the stock market getting to 1400 at all? What if Charles Plosser's dissent is more powerful than we think, because it was accompanied by two others, and Ben Bernanke doesn't signal QE3 at Jackson Hole next week? What if the Fed isn't set to do what some people think?
Well, we actually hope that he's right, because if rates are going up sooner than 2.5 years from now, it's because the economy is actually getting better quicker than Bernanke thinks that it's going to. And we're in the camp, like a Buffett, who says that the economy is not going into a recession, and that it probably will improve faster than the Fed thinks now. And if that's the case, rates can go higher, and it's very important to put rates in perspective right now. 0%, obviously exceptionally low. If rates were to move up to 1% or 2%, that's still very low. If earnings and the economy are coming back, we think that the stock market can do well, even with rates modestly higher. So, you know, we're not fearful about that on a intermediate term basis. On the day that rates move higher, stocks probably sell off, but longer term, we think markets can go higher as long as the economy is getting better, and that's what we're looking for.
Okay, I want to kind of do a little lightning round here with you to get your view out on a couple of the specific market issues, and then more specifically on some companies that you think are ones we should be looking at. First of all, you aren't concerned about the European debt crisis.
We are concerned about the European debt crisis, but we do think that Europe is going to muddle through it and eventually get to the right solution to calm the markets down. They did learn from the United States in 2008 that you have to take dramatic actions to not let the thing have a domino effect. So we think they're going to address it sooner rather than later, and we think it's going to be like last year. It's going to die down, and we're going to get back to looking at how companies are doing.
And you are expecting a meaningful pickup in M&A activity, mergers and acquisitions. Of course, that's bullish for stocks. Why do you see that?
Well, you've seen on a weekly basis deals happening, and what you're seeing is the acquiring company is paying a 40 to 60% premium, so they're making a call that stock prices are cheap and they can pay a lot more and still do well with the deal. And interestingly, in the vast majority of cases, the stock price of the acquiring company is also going up the day of the announcement, which means that the market feels that these deals are very good for companies, and the market's endorsing it. And generally, when that happens, M&A activity will pick up. We think there are too many companies at 8 and 9 times earnings that a competitor can buy.
All right, let's run through some of your favorites for appreciation, because I feel like your list has a slightly different flavor from the last time we talked. Analog devices.
Analog Devices just came down about 30%. It's a very good company. They announced earnings last night. They did disappoint and lower guidance, yet the stock is up today. They have $8 or $9 cash and selling at 10 times earnings. Very good business. It's a technology and industrial company at a great price.
Dell.
Dell, interestingly, had good earnings numbers yesterday. The revenue outlook was disappointing. The stock is getting beaten up today. We think that's absurd. They have $4 of cash, $2 of earnings, which they lifted yesterday, and the stock's at 14 and a quarter. So 7 times earnings and less than 5 times if you adjust for cash. We don't think the stock is going to stay down here. We think they've fixed themselves, and it's easily worth in the high teens, low 20s.
Corning.
Corning, it makes technology products. They make glass for flat-screen TVs. The company also is selling at an obscenely low price, generally at about 7.5-8 times earnings. Good long-term demand for the product, just way too cheap. The CFO just bought about 70,000 shares in the last week or two.
Wells Fargo.
We think that after a horrific period for the banking group, banks overall are poised to do better. Wells Fargo is one of the best positioned, is very inexpensive on its earnings power, and we think that regardless of the housing market bottoming out, or the housing market's going to stay at a bottom for a while, Wells Fargo can still do well. If the housing market ever does better, that's even that much better for Wells.
MetLife.
MetLife is selling at about a 35% discount to book value. Very strong cash flow, very strong earnings. Stock is off about $10 in the last few weeks, and we think it makes no sense.
Run through your favorites for good dividends with modest appreciation.
Well, the story on those dividend stocks, and I mentioned a few earlier, like Abbott and Duke Energy and Heinz and Honeywell and Royal Dutch, is they have a record of raising the dividends over time. This year, the group that we like has raised the dividends about 5 to 8%, yet you're paying a 4% yield on them. A record of not cutting the dividend. In a okay economy, we expect the dividends to continue to go up. And these stocks are actually about one-third less volatile than the overall market, so you get the best of both worlds. You're going to get an income stream, modest appreciation, and preservation of capital.
And Vodafone's one more of those.
And Vodafone, actually, they probably have the most interesting dividend profile because they're going to be raising it a lot because they're getting money from Verizon Wireless.
David Katz, thanks so much.
Great to be here.
CEO of Matrix Asset Advisors. Up next, an international economist who says the ECB, the European policymakers, have to do a lot more. Guarantee all public debt. That's what the ECB should do. Get out their atomic financial weapons. Find out what his reasoning is next on Bloomberg Radio. Now we move on to go deeper into the issues that Sarah Eisen just so capably raised, the Swiss franc and more broadly the debt crisis, because the Swiss franc's problem is that there is so much fear of what's going on in Europe that all kinds of investors have been piling on, pushing the value higher. That's hurt Swiss exporters. That's why it's such a concern to their policymakers. Joining us now is Charles Wiplos. He's a professor of international economics at the Graduate Institute in Geneva, where he's the director of the International Center for Money and Banking Studies. He's also a member of the panel of experts of the European Parliament's Economic and Monetary Affairs Committee. Charles, welcome to the Hayes Advantage.
Hello.
Lovely to have you.
My pleasure.
As I was telling my listeners a little bit earlier in the show about my guest who would be talking about Europe, I took a bit of a quote where you were speaking to the Financial Times, and you were saying that buying a little debt here and there is not going to stop the European debt crisis. You said that European Central Bank has to guarantee all public debt. They have to get out their atomic weapons. Wow.
Well, the situation is pretty bad. The market has been a bit spooked by the purchases of the ECB over the last week or so, but this is what I call buying a little bit here and a little bit there. That's far short of providing the market with a final solution. And what we see is what we have seen for the last year and a half is that the authorities are basically always behind the curve, always reacting to the next market move instead of anticipating the markets and beating them.
Well, Charles, I have asked many people on my show about this because it seems to me humbly, that had policymakers been able to get out in front of this, even, say, a year ago, the cost of these bailouts, the cost of this whole thing would be less because, you know, markets wouldn't have gotten so out of line. But the response I get so often is, but, you know, it's a complicated issue. The Eurozone is still evolving. They are taking steps. And even the press conference yesterday, where Merkel and Sarkozy rejected doing any kind of Eurobond yet, was seen as a step forward because it shows this framework Franco-German cooperation, which is central to keeping the euro together and ultimately resolving the debt crisis?
Well, I think the meeting we had yesterday between Angela Merkel and Nicolas Sarkozy is just telling us they are trying to patch up a very difficult relationship. They had nothing really new to announce. They each give something to the other, but nothing crucial or nothing strategic. And that's where the problem lies, is that we don't have one driver in this car. We have several of them, and each of them has its own, his or her own political constraints and objectives, and they make a mess out of it all.
Well, that seems like a pretty good summation, because, you know, it's certainly been one of the criticisms of Angela Merkel that she's had an eye on politics. But of course, you're a politician, you have to. And a lot of her citizens now, according to the latest survey, are questioning the benefits of being in the euro. And I think a majority in one poll saying they aren't getting what they want out of it.
Well, the Germans were never big fans of the euro. They thought that their own currency, the Deutsche Mark, was a great currency and didn't see the need to give it up, at least from an economic point of view. Right now, the German taxpayers are completely scared that they will pay for what they think the lazy Greeks and the lazy Portuguese and the lazy Italians, that, by the way, they never wanted these countries to join the euro area. So that's why yesterday, when Merkel and Sarkozy agreed on no euro bonds, which they see rightly so as a mechanism to pay for the Greeks, the Portuguese, and so on and so forth, they were pleased. So that's what Merkel got out of yesterday. On the other side, the French have been asking for 20 years for what they call an economic government for Europe, which nobody understands what it is. And the Germans always were against, because they saw that as a way of interfering in their domestic businesses. And there was a joint declaration that that's what they wanted. But do you need a summit, a formal summit, to make this kind of anti-statements? There's nothing like an economic government for Europe. It doesn't exist. There is no polity for that, no elections, no nothing. So that's vacuous.
So what's going to happen? Is this going to just bounce along? Will a more of a crisis be avoided? Or is it going to take something, a worse meltdown in markets, to force politicians to act? What do you see?
Well, now that the crisis has moved to core countries, especially Italy and in some ways Spain, and that we see the first signal that it could move to France, we are facing a situation that is so big in terms of public debt that it's out of the hands of the governments. There is no way they can do anything, and it's now entirely in the hands of the European Central Bank. That's why there is a glimmer of hope in the fact that the ECB, contrary to what it ever said, is now buying Spanish and Italian debt. I said earlier, too little, too late, but at least they have taken a first step in this direction. And my prediction is that they will go all the way to the end.
All the way to the end and buy up all the debt they need to, as you suggested?
Or guaranteeing. I don't think they need to buy it. The beauty of central bank guarantees is it's enough to say you do it.
And
quiet down the market.
There you go. We're going to continue our conversation with Charles Y. Plus on Bloomberg Radio. We want to look also at what is happening in Switzerland. The Swiss franc gaining as policymakers don't signal a strong step. That's next on Bloomberg Radio. So let's get back to Charles Wyplos. He is joining us today to talk about Europe, the debt crisis, what can and cannot be done, perhaps even more importantly. Charles is a professor of international economics at the Graduate Institute in Geneva, where he's director of the International Center for Money and Banking Studies. I want to have you comment on the financial transaction tax, Charles. It created a little bit of a stir in the markets today. Is this an efficient idea from an economist's standpoint?
No, I think most economists think that it can't exist because either you do it absolutely everywhere in the world, in every corner, or you don't do it. If you just do it, say in Paris and Berlin, or Frankfurt rather, the markets will just migrate elsewhere to New York, Singapore, and probably London, because I can't see any way the British authorities would agree to such a tax.
So then why did they suggest it?
I think they are playing to their electorates. Both of them are facing elections in the next 6 to 10 months. They need to say things that their electorates will like. The idea of going after these mean speculators who are the source of all trouble is very, very popular in both France and Germany, and that's what they say, and they probably know very well that it's not going to happen.
Well, it's interesting too, because we all know that it's the policies, it's the central bank policies and the treasury policies, et cetera, that open the door, really, you know, give the paths for the speculators to follow, right? And speaking in that vein, is there anything the Swiss can do to prevent their currency from strengthening at this point? People, you know, currency market intervention, frequently the impact is temporary. Changing interest rates, perhaps more lasting. How do you analyze their situation in the context of this broader European debt crisis?
Well, the Swiss are totally desperate. Their interest rate is 0%. So they can't reduce it. Some people have suggested to make it negative, but that's tinkering with the financial markets in a very serious way, and it's very hard to do. At the same time, the franc has appreciated by close to 40% over the last year or so. So that's seriously hurting their exports. But there's not really much they can do. In just 1 week, the central bank has decided to increase essentially the money supply from 30 billion francs to 200 billion francs, and the franc is a bit more than a dollar these days. So they are basically flooding the market with cash, and the market is just absorbing this cash and asking for more. And why? Well, there is major concern about the euro area, of course. The Standard & Poor's downgrading of the U.S. treasuries has scared a number of investors around the world. And where can they go? There is not, you know, if the U.S. treasury is not safe, if the German treasury is not safe, where do you go? Well, you have gold and the Swiss franc. And the problem is Switzerland is very, very small compared to the financial market. So they are just flooded.
More broadly, on the European economy, Charles, because I'm thinking what this all means for citizens, for consumers, households, and investors. We saw a slowdown in the second quarter GDP figures for Europe, including Germany. Is the debt crisis taking its toll? Is there a chance Europe falls more broadly into a recession?
Well, it's more or less the same as in the U.S. The recovery was not very strong through the euro area. Then the crisis that's now been going on for a year and a half, every other week, the average consumer watches TV and is told that there is a disaster looming up there. So gradually people get really worried, and when the consumer starts being worried, we are in a recession. So yes, there is a serious risk. Especially as European governments now, one after the other, are plunging into contractionary fiscal policies because of the crisis. The ECB has no interest rate policy to speak of. So, yes, we do have a serious risk on both sides of the Atlantic.
Well, Charles, I hope you'll come back soon so we can continue to discuss this and as more data comes in, which lets us know if that's really happening or not. That was Charles Wyplos. He's professor of international economics at the Graduate Institute in Geneva. Up next, we're going to be taking an in-depth look at the markets, investors, not just stocks, but bonds, commodities, even some real estate. This is the Hayes Advantage on Bloomberg Radio.
You can subscribe to Bloomberg's premium podcast service at Bloomberg.com/Tom Keene and listen to the Hayes Advantage weekdays at noon Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM satellite radio channel 113. Copyright 2011 Bloomberg LP.